Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Canadian PodCount. My name's Andrew Campbell, and I'm joined, as usual, by the amazing Sarah Sash. Hi, Sarah.
Well, thank you. That's a kindness. Good to talk to you. It's been a while.
It has. We've had lots of episodes over the last little while since we were in person together in Newfoundland for the DFC annual meeting. So it's great to be here launching our fourth season of the Canadian PodCount now that we're into the fall.
Yeah, big day for us. Fourth season. Like, was it still COVID when we started this?
It must have been. But it's been, you know what? It has been a lot of fun, Sarah, to be able to go back and forth and be able to chat with you about kind of the perspectives over the last few years about how things are in BC and kind of share what things are going on here in the central part of the country.
Yeah, indeed. So are all your crops in? Are you done? Is it raining?
Good one. No, actually, today's job is to, as I look out over my, kind of barn office, I see the manure crew is draglining manure. If I logged on to Operations Center, I would see that the combine is running. We're about halfway done soybeans. And if I looked out the door, I would see that this afternoon's project is to install the combine door that shattered yesterday once we bring it from a farm. So we're full on in fall mode here.
Dialed into all your monitoring systems there. And we're going to be talking about that a bit today. I noticed on the light scroll of Facebook the other day that it's actually Cybersecurity Month in Canada, awareness. Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada shared that on their Facebook page. And I thought, geez, you know, how does that relate to my operation?
Well, I think that's a very good thing, because cybersecurity on the farm is one of those things that, we hear about, we've talked about, you wonder, you know, is it just somebody kind of in their basement, kind of cracking codes? But honestly, like, I think the reality is that cyber threats on dairy farms are a pretty real thing we need to think about.
Yeah, not top of mind, but we've got cows, we've got milk, and we've got potential hackers. So today we're going to try to bring some of that to your attention, get some thoughts from a real expert about cybersecurity and about what we could do about it on our dairy farms.
That's coming right up on the Canadian PodCount.
Cybersecurity at the farm is a very serious issue, but not one we talk that much about. So to find out more, our next guest is a true expert, an academic entrepreneur in the cybersecurity area, the space of it all, and a Canadian research chair in cybersecurity and threat intelligence.
He's the director of the science of the Cyber Science Lab, a research lab dedicated to advancing research and training in cybersecurity, and the founder and director of the Master of Cybersecurity and Threat Intelligence Program at the University of Guelph. Dr. Ali Degantana, thanks very much for joining the Canadian PodCount.
Great to be here. I'm talking to you and your audience.
Well, it's great to have you. We need to start from the beginning, I think, because obviously this is not something we're talking about all the time. What's cybersecurity? I mean, we all have a sense, but in terms of farm context, what is it? And why is it important for modern dairy farming operations?
Right. I mean, with the wide adoption of digital technology these days everywhere, when you go to any dairy farm, I am seeing a lot more data transferring all along every day, more than livestock, right? In terms of value, amount, and everything, right? And looking at it that way, these dairies these days are acting more like data centers, right? Data about milk, data about calf, data about codes, data about biosecurity, data about clients, data about payments, data about next delivery, right? And guess what? These are best great information for all hackers out there, right? I mean, I'm not only talking about credit card information or client private information or the supplier's information, which are valuable. But beyond that, knowing about how they can disrupt an operation. For example, how can I cause some disrupt in the operation of this farm so I can ask for a ransom payment, right? Or we have even seen some attackers are interested to leverage the infrastructure on those farms to conduct attack against others, right? So if I am a Russian-based actor and I know that most of the time my IPs are being blocked, shown by the banks in Canada, I don't mind to just compromise some of these farmers' infrastructure and then use that to conduct the attack elsewhere, right? So saying that, we are looking at ever increasing what is called a cybersecurity attack surface in the farms, right? Which means more and more points are available for the attackers to connect themselves to the environment and leverage, right, their access. Whether it's stealing the data directly, creating backdoor, causing disruption, or leveraging it for other nefarious purposes. So when we talk about securing the farm, we are looking at security at three levels. Security of the data, which means data at rest, at transit, or even when it's stored, right? Or when it's like get backup and you're just going to destroy the data later on. The operation security, the operation of the farm itself security, and then security in the sense that you will not be used as the platform to attack other environments, right? So these are like the three aspects when we look into the farms these days, right, for securing them. And among all the farming operations, dairy seems to be the leading in terms of tech adoption, as well as in terms of, attack adoption, right, or hackers adoption, right, on both sides.
Right. Well, and you know what, Ali, because when you do talk about that, I mean, you know, both Sarah and I are running dairy farms with robots. So I think, not to say that there aren't all dairy farms don't have some element of a computer, of technology and all of that, but when I think of my farm, and maybe we can break a little bit of that out when you talk about, data operations and then kind of the third party side, here on this farm, you know, we have the main robot computer that's feeding data somewhere to a cloud. I have no idea. I get it on my phone. So therefore, I know it's transferring somewhere in there. It's controlling the robots. We do the same on the grain side of the operation. Like, can you talk a little bit about where I'm most vulnerable or a farm like me is most vulnerable to a cyber attack?
Sure. I mean, I can give you a little bit history of how I got engaged, right, in this field, right? I moved from University of Sheffield in UK in 2018 to University of Guelph to build a Master of Cybersecurity program. And prior to joining University of Guelph, I wasn't aware of any attack, anything in the farming sector, right, of cybersecurity. Because we were mainly mostly focused, if you ask any cybersecurity professional, we are mostly focused on financial or like military, right, those sectors, right? But in 2019, it was like in February, that I received a call from someone that, Ali, you are a cybersecurity person at UOG? And I was like, yes, I am. I am a farmer, and I am seeing that ransom message on the screen. What should I do? And I was like, don't do anything. I'm just coming over, right? Don't do anything. Don't touch anything, right? So, and since then, so for example, the numbers were significantly increasing because of, especially during COVID, a lot of remote access has been set up for many farms and the vendors have setting those up and most of them were not secure, right? And then the technology adoption. So this year, we are like what, in October, late October. And in our lab, we have supported more than 40 cases already of the attack. And we are only serving Southern Ontario close to Guelph, right? We are not like a multinational company that we can go and serve everyone, right? So, in terms of where we see vulnerabilities, most of the time, the interfaces, sometimes APIs, sometimes your cloud access, right, that are connecting the farm data to the outside world, those are the most vulnerable points, right? In addition to that, a lot of devices are now being deployed on the farm that they directly send information outside, as you mentioned, to the cloud. You are seeing it on your phone, right? And these devices themselves are having vulnerabilities that can be exploited by the attackers remotely, right? So if you just Google, you will see that some of the ethical hackers have shown that how you can even remotely attack a tractor, right? That is sending the data, they find vulnerabilities and control, right? Get access to those data, right? And but what I'm saying is like those IT connections are traditionally the best and the most important point for the attackers to target, right? But as we see more and more OT adoption, and these devices tend to send data directly, right, to the cloud or to your solution provider, vendor, they are increasingly becoming part of those vulnerabilities and the attack surface that the farms are having and exposing to.
Well, I have so many questions that I'm sure we're going to get to as we work through all of this. But in terms of the different types, so I think you mentioned three types that you kind of would see, like on the farm, what's going to happen when something like this has happened to us? It's going to pop up on the screen, or how are we going to tell that we're actually even being victim of one of these things as we're looking at all our things when we show up to the barn in the morning?
Right. Well, unfortunately, most of the time we are being called when a farmer sees a pop-up message, which usually the message is like, we have encrypted your data and you need to pay us that amount to get your data back, right? And that's when we call. Why I am saying unfortunately, because when you look into other industries, these industries already have some security monitoring solutions in place. So we can monitor and we can catch attackers before they get to that stage, right? Because, you know, when an attacker showing you that pop-up message, they know that at that point you would get the help from professionals, right? And they know that at that point you know that they are there. So they do that when they are done with your system. They steal all the information, they steal everything, and you have no more value. Okay, so that's the last thing. Let's put the ransom, right? It's just the last thing I can take from them, right? So, and I can tell you, almost all the cases that we have seen in this field, except those that first approach us for an attack for ransomware, and then they use our security monitoring solution or other security monitoring solutions, right, for that purpose, we are getting engaged at that point. And most of the time, that's just too late. We go there, and we are like, okay, so you have been hacked three ways. You know, they are controlling the network. They are controlling these assets, right? And our options are either decrypting the information if we have the key ourselves, right? Or negotiate with the attackers, right? But what I can tell you is, like, that's the last step of the attack, right? So when we saw those kind of things, we are talking to our clients like, we are talking about data exfiltration. The information has been stolen. You should be aware. Your credit cards, your client information, your suppliers, all of them are at risk. You need to inform them, right? But as you said, Sarah, most of the time, that's the thing, the pop-up message, right? Which is bad, right? But there are cases that we could catch them, right, before the attackers get to that stage, if the people, the farmers, have used a security monitoring solution.
Well, then that actually gets us right into that conversation about how we protect our computers and our mobile devices. Is that the easiest thing? Do we get a security, kind of monitoring solution and all of our problems are magically solved? Or is there more, like, what are some of those basic things we can do just to protect ourselves and our computers?
Right. Sorry. To talk about that, I want to give a little bit background of categories of attackers that are active in this field, right? So we are talking about three types of threat actors or attackers in the ag and food. One are cyber criminals, right? So they are interested in your data, in your private information, and finally your money, like free ransomware. The second group are advanced persistent threat actors, government-based threat actors, government-supported actors, right? They are not interested in your data. They just want to create capabilities for the cyber warfare and cyber war activities that they have, right? And we have seen them actively working in Canada, right? Specifically, like April 26 is a Chinese hacking team, or Orange Worm, which is an Iranian hacking team. And we are working with CSE. We keep informing them about this. And the third are animal activists, right? They are the ones that are disrupting the farm, and then they ask farmer to do or to follow or to do the action that they want, right? So these are the three categories of the attackers, right? But what we can do against them, right? Against a state-sponsored hacking team, my advice to most of the farmers is you can't do much about it, right? Unless that your operation is quite big and you can afford to have a cybersecurity team on site, you can't do much about it, right? So let's put them aside, right? So we are dealing with two active type of hackers that the farmers may see, and they may do something like cyber criminals and the animal activists. For cyber criminals, you can always imagine a cyber criminal unit as a company. For them, they are always looking for low-hanging fruit, easy targets, right? So by deploying some security prevention mechanisms, right? You mentioned about some antiviruses. Those are the very basic, but more than that. Like, for example, if you can have an automatic patching policy, right? or making sure that you have two-factor authentication enabled on your farms, right? What you would do on that stage is you are making your farm more secure than other farms. So the cyber criminals are looking at it and like, I will go to the other farm. Why should I go to this farm, right? Okay? But this is always something relative, which means the more that others are investing, you need to invest more, right? I need to just make sure that you're secure enough, right? So saying that, if you have automated patching or proper patching mechanism in your farm and two-factor authentication plus the security monitoring, that's what is needed these days, right? So with these three, you are good in terms of cybersecurity investment, right? You don't probably need anything more than that, right? I have seen some farms are looking at like building a cybersecurity policy that is mostly because they want to show something to the insurance companies, because some insurance companies are giving discount on the insurance if you have these policies in place, right? So that could be an additional advantage that you can get with these investments, right? But when we talk about the animal activists, that's a different story, you know? For them, most of the time what we saw is they have very good information of the targets. They probably know the owner, they probably know where they are, right? I have even sometimes seeing that some of these attacks have been conducted manually, which is someone get to the farm, attach a USB drive, run the malware there, and leave, right? So what I'm saying is, and for these animal activists, they are really not looking for, like, not after the money or any advantage. They're just after that person, right? And for those kind of people or that kind of adversaries, we would need to deploy and implement some security protection on every single device. That could include, like, putting endpoints monitoring solutions, that is called, right? I just don't want to be too technical here in this context, right? But these are like the agents that you install on every system. And if there is anything malicious comes to every single system, you will block them or you will get the report on that, right? So far, we have only came across three cases in 2024 that attributed back to animal activity. So they are not that profound, right? But my expectation is the more that these groups are learning that how they can play with the ransomware and this ransomware as a service becomes more accessible, we may see more of those, right? Kind of attacks.
I was curious some clarity on the patching bit. I, as much as I understood everything else you said, I didn't know anything about that. So can you just circle a little bit to what patching is and what we might do about it?
Sure. See, when a software, a technology, a solution is built, right, these solutions need to be updated regularly. And some of these updates are related to cybersecurity weaknesses. So security professionals are finding those weaknesses, reporting to the vendor, and vendor make the patch available, right? So for example, if you have looked into your Windows, there are sometimes that Windows is asking that you have to apply that update, right? When that's mandatory, it means Windows is going to put some security patches there, right? What we are seeing in the ag sector is that a lot of these vendors are either not providing patches, or even if they are providing, they are not communicating. They have no mechanism to automatically patch, right? So I'm not going to name any vendor here, but a lot of these farm management softwares, right, or solutions are having known exposed vulnerabilities, right? And even if it is not provided by your vendor, you can look into the cybersecurity professionals, because we are coming with those patches regardless of the vendor. So like, if you are using that software, implement that patch. So those vulnerabilities would be covered. The point of the patching is, if there is any vulnerability that can be remotely exploited, we cannot do much about it from a cybersecurity professional point of view. That's mostly the vendor that should stop it, right? And that's your responsibility to keep your softwares up to date, right?
Yeah, that's the one. I know I go out as part of my routine and I update all the things every Sunday because I notice that nobody else even like restarts the computer. So keeping your updates is very important.
I'm sorry, you're supposed to update your computer? I am glad we're having this conversation. You're supposed to restart your computer? I didn't know that was even a thing. Because I guess for me, I'm curious, like we talk about the barn computer as being, you know, kind of the I think most farms, no matter what level of
technology you have. You've got some farm computer that's either keeping accounting software, livestock tracking systems, whatever it is, right? So that's kind of the one that I would think of first as maybe that initial target. But there's a lot more. You mentioned kind of, you know, the technology that's in a tractor. You know, we've got the technology that is controlling, you know, kind of the environmental conditions of a barn. You've got lots of different systems that are all somehow connected to, you know, the internet, or even if they are some kind of a computer system. I guess I'm curious which ones tend to be targeted the most, Ali.
I am afraid I can't tell you which ones. I would say it is always the case that the most vulnerable ones are targeted first, right? And, you know, because when you look into it from the eyes of an attacker, as an attacker, they are not going to go and identify that that's a Windows machine or that's a tractor. It doesn't matter. That's a system that is running an operating system for them, right? And as long as they can run their malicious code, and if they can get to one of those machines, it would be trivial for them to copy themselves on all other machines, because those machines are in the same network, right? So if you mean that which ones are the ones that the farmers see most often, that's the computer that they have all the accounting, et cetera, right? Because that's the one that they have a screen and they can pop up and see the ransom message, right? But in terms of when we investigate and we find out, I can tell you we have seen a wide range of initial access attempts by the attackers, right? We have seen them trying to come through mobile apps. We have seen them coming through the auto upload, right? Data upload of some of the vendor solutions. And there were even cases that they were coming through the robots that are installing on the farm, right? Because, you know, what they need is just an initial access to your environment. And once they are there, they can just create a user for themselves, copy the files, and then they make themselves home, right? There.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about here. We should take a break to hear a word from our sponsors, but there's lots more to come about cybersecurity at the farm with Dr. Ali Degatana, Director and Master of Cybersecurity and Threat Intelligence Program at the University of Guelph. Stick with us.
As Canadian dairy farmers, we follow ProAction, Dairy Farmers of Canada's National Quality Assurance Program with 6 modules. Modules like milk quality, that stands for high standards of milk production, or food safety, producing milk that meets 42 requirements, and animal care, that means caring for every cow. ProAction sets standards of excellence. That's what's behind the blue cow logo. Dairy Farmers of Canada.
And we're back with Dr. Ali Degatana, Director of Master of Cybersecurity and Threat Intelligence at the University of Guelph. Ali, if you want to explain to our listeners what can be some of the consequences of this cyber attack, we talked a little bit about, you know, okay, the computer's frozen, but can you maybe get into a little bit more detail? Like, what are some of the real consequences? What are some of the real impacts a farmer will have that you've seen from those that have faced an attack?
Sure. I mean, I can refer to a report which was published early this year, like in January, that 60% of a small and medium business in Canada go bankrupt within 6 months after cyber attack, to just show you the impact of that, right? And the main reason for bankruptcies of those businesses are three things. First, the payment that they have to make to the attackers most of the time, right? Second is if they have not addressed that issue, that vulnerability, those weaknesses properly, the attackers would come back and keep asking, right, for more and more, right? That's the second reason. And the third reason are the legal suits that comes after the attack, right, against the companies, right? So these are the three main reasons, the increasing cost of cybersecurity that they need to put in there, and the legal cases that comes back and and cause these disruptions, right, and to the business. In the farming sector, I haven't seen that kind of consequential attack that make farmers to just go bankrupt, right? At least those that I have worked with, right? But the impacts are varied, right? So, for example, I have worked with the farmers that the impact was that their data had been encrypted, but then they were lucky and the attackers did not use the best encryption technique, so we could decrypt it. So the impact was quite minimal. Of course, the impact was quite minimal if we could convince them that after that, they need to use a security monitoring. Otherwise, if they're working with another dairy, it was, I think, it was in March 2023 that we went there. They had like 20 systems that was encrypted. We just recovered for them. We begged them that, please let us monitor. And they said, no, we are good. We are good, right? We will use our IT services. And then like a month after in April, we have been called back on the scene. This time, the attacker encrypted. Even the milking robot was encrypted. Like, they're going that far, right? So all the operations were disrupted. And this time, they were using a very strong encryption technique that our option was only to go back and negotiate with the attackers and saying that, do you want to get less, right? That was the only option left there, right? But what I'm saying is, like, that's the minimum consequence, right? A disruption, an attack, right? And the cost of that depends on the size of operation, because if it takes us a few days to just recover, you may need to consider that you need to move your livestock somewhere else, milking, all those impacts, right? That's why I'm just not looking at those. I'm just looking at the IT part and saying that you need to pay for the ransomware, and that's the case, right? But we were engaged in more complicated cases. So for example, there were cases that private information, like accounting information, right, fine banking information of other third parties were stored on that machine, right? If that is the case, you got to inform those third parties. And that means, I mean, we are not doing that. We are just advising the farmer to do so. They need to do it through their own lawyer, but that would be all. And then we were working with, in one case specifically, because it went all the way to the court, right, that we went as an expert witness to just discuss about our findings, right? And I find that the cost is quite significant in terms of all those other parties have sued back the farmers, why they have not implemented minimum security in place. Because, you know, you need to be able to prove in the courts that you have implemented minimum required security. If it is not there, and that required security is based on the judge judgment, you know, it depends. If your business is quite big, their expectation is much higher than a small business, right? But if you cannot show that, then you would be liable for all those have been impacted by that cyber attack, right?
I'm just curious how we can get ourselves up to speed on getting these minimum standards in place. Like, if I think about my farm or Andrew thinks about his, we've got people coming on and off all the time that are saying, oh yeah, I need to use TeamViewer. Like, our feed guy is wanting to look at the feed. Our robot guys are wanting to look at the production. We've got all these different things happening. And if I start to put in place some protocols, I could ultimately block all them from being able to do what they do. And then now I'll have everyone on the farm going, Sarah, we can't access our things. You put a firewall, you've done these things that we don't like. We can't make anything work. How do I get together and have like a whole team approach to this where my suppliers are still going to be able to do the work they need to do? I'm going to have the security I need. And everybody's going to be able to just carry on with their day in a more protected fashion. Big question,
tell,
but...
Don't tell me. I mean, I am on the same page with you. We had one of our clients that he called me a day and told me that I am going to implement that solution, but the vendor is asking me to turn off the firewall. And I am like, are you sure you want to implement a solution that the vendor doesn't know even how to deal with the firewall, right? I mean, you know that I am talking with different groups, right? So one of the audiences I have are the governments and like policymakers, and I keep telling them, I keep bugging them in the last 3-4 years that we need to set some standard in terms of cybersecurity in the ag and food sector, right? Currently, the vendors don't care about cybersecurity at all, right? If I can just ship a product to you and tell you that it works only if you turn off your firewall, and the people have no option but paying for that, and they are allowed to operate in Canada, what's the expectation? Of course, when you brought your firewall down, every single hacker that just happens to pass by, they will come and attack you, right? Even if they don't want to, you are just, I mean, with no firewall, you are like, come and hack me, right? That kind of business, right? So what I'm trying to say is, like, I do agree with you, right? And that's unfortunate that in 2024, we are seeing vendors asking for, not following even the minimum security requirements in their own products, right? I can tell you, this is among a very few sectors in Canada that is behind, right? I mean, I would say ag and then maybe transport, right? Those two, right? We used to see these things in the healthcare, but they have done a lot, right, in the past few years, right? You cannot see these kind of things there, right? So But do not lose all your hopes, right? So for example, if you work with cybersecurity professionals, they can come with solutions. So for example, what I did on that specific case was like, I have talked to the vendor and say, what exactly do you want, right? So they want an API concentrator. Again, I don't want to be too technical. So what I did, I created a cloud account, put our firewall there, and make sure that all these data go through our firewall to the cloud account, and then the vendor was reading it from that cloud account. So I protected the farm completely, right? So what it means is, cybersecurity professionals can help you to be more innovative, right, in terms of how you can protect. But it is important for the vendors to understand that the security, the cybersecurity is an important element during acquisition of any solution. Or like other countries like Netherlands, like Australia, we need to put these minimal security requirements in place for any vendor who wants to serve, right? And, you know, I was telling them that you do not need to make it complicated. I don't think any farmer would like to know about ISO 27001 standard. No one cares. But make it as level A, B, C, D, and then the vendors would get A, B, C, D, right? That's it, right? I mean, you don't need to make it that complicated. I mean, if you look into, for example, we have done that in Canada. We have done it in the utility sector. If you look into the Ontario Cybersecurity Framework that was built in 2018, you know, back in 2018, we find that the utility sector is not having enough security in place. And there is a big gap between cybersecurity requirements and their practices. So they have built a standard that could cover this gap, right? And it was very simple, A, B, C, D level, right? And these days, if you look into a lot of these small utilities have been moved significantly, right, into cybersecurity. We need something like that on the vendor side for the ag and food. But you do not need to wait for that standard to be built. I am begging a lot of people to work on it. No one seems listening, right? It seems you are all waiting for the disaster to happen, and then you're all coming and saying, oh, right? But anyway, meanwhile, if you are having those kind of solutions, if you are worried about that, there are resources available. So, for example, we are offering a free security self-assessment that we can send you. You fill up that form, and then we understand what are your weaknesses. Right, or you can conduct vulnerability assessment. They are quite cheap, right? Relatively cheap, right, to be conducted. So you at least know what are the vulnerabilities you have, right? And then you can plan around that. But those are what needs to be done. I mean, I am seeing that some of the vendors in the field have become more innovative, especially those who are more like in the startup, starting adoption stage, and they're offering these things free of charge. So they're saying that if you get our solution, we will give you vulnerability assessment for 2 years, for 3 years, right? These are good things, right, that I'm hearing and I'm saying, but we are far from the state that.
So then, Ali, whose responsibility really is that? Because we talk about the vendors, obviously. They're the ones that are, you know, doing a lot of that connection. But as you talk about kind of an industry approach, if one vendor is one option and another vendor, like, we deal with multiple vendors anyway. So if all of a sudden they have different requirements or different systems, then it gets complicated. Like, is this... You said no one is listening. I am listening right now, Ali. Whose job do you think this is? Is this a role that as farmers we need to take the lead on and our producer organization should do it? Should we wait for our vendors to do it? Should we go to government? What's their role in doing this to make sure that we have this minimal level of security set? We all know what it's doing and we're all kind of following that. Whose job?
It may not want your listeners to hear, but I'm saying it. You know, cybersecurity is the farmer responsibility.
Oh, no, next.
At the end of the day, I know that. You know,
okay.
At the end of the day, you know, at the end of the day, your operation would be impacted, yeah. Right? I have been in these cases that farmers were thinking that's the vendor problem, but I can tell you, whenever I go to these investigations, we are dealing with four or five vendors. Everyone is trying to avoid engagement. There's an, it's not our product, we are not going to help, we have privacy restriction, etc., etc. They are somehow right, because, you know, there are a lot of privacy regulations to be worried about, right? But what I'm saying is, end of the day, that's your business, you would be liable, right? And you would be disrupted, right? So cybersecurity is the owner, the farmer's job, and that's in every industry, right? So for example, I'm giving an example of University of Guelph, right? In University of Guelph, we use tons of vendors and technologies. But when we get hacked, that's our responsibility, right? It's not Microsoft's responsibility we have been hacked, right?
So then is it a case of we should, as producers, because I find the challenge in that is I'm going to do something, but if I'm the only one doing it, everybody, as Sarah said, everybody else is going to complain. It's not going to work very well, all of that. Is this something that we as producers should be pushing our producer organizations to kind of help us take a lead on this? Should this be a bigger priority for them?
Right. So this, the other part of this story that I want to tell you is, like, you know, cybersecurity these days is quite expensive, right? Why? Because you will see financial sector and others, businesses with high profit margin are willing to pay anything, right? And it's a fact that farmers and the operations that they do may not have easy, I mean, simply the profit margin, right, to invest on all of these. So we don't need to reinvent the wheel. There are other countries that have adopted that and we can follow, right? So for example, in Netherlands, they are having a scheme that they are matching one-to-one any expenditure that is in cybersecurity for the farmers, right? Or in Australia, what they did is they have created a separated platform that is secure, which is called Data Exchange. And you can subscribe to that. That's paid by the government, right? And all your data would be stored there securely. And all the vendors are connected to that secure exchange to read your data, right? And I give you services that you need, right? But, and I can tell you, when I'm saying no one is listening, is I am going to these people and presenting them all the options, but nothing is changing, right? But what I'm trying to say is, like, going back to it, eventually, that's the farmer's responsibility. We can collectively work together and push the decision makers, the policy makers, right, to provide more support. But at the end of the day, when the attack happens, it would be you and the cybersecurity person who is helping you that got to deal with the case, right? So meanwhile, it is important to reach out to whoever you know in cybersecurity. I mean, get some free assessment done. Get some vulnerability assessment done. You at least know where you are, right? And what investment needs to be done there, right? That's what you can do meanwhile. And as I said, it is important that, you know, it's in Canada, for example, we are subsidizing biosecurity costs significantly. Why we are not doing it for cybersecurity, right? That's a question when I put on the people's table. They are like, oh, yeah, that makes sense, right? That makes sense because we do subsidize biosecurity. It's expensive, right? We cannot expect every single farmer to have all those the biosecurity checking, all those things to be done. Same can be said for cybersecurity.
That really resonates with me when you put it in that context of just about how we're handling dealing with this type of a threat ultimately. So if we did on the farm experience a cyber attack, what disaster recovery and business continuity plans should we have in place to minimize the downtime? I mean, we think about, oh, what if there's, you know, poor weather? We think about those things all the time. What are we going to do if this happens? I'm not thinking that we're spending a lot of time on the farm being like, well, what if our computers are hacked? So what would be the first steps just to have some kind of plan in place about what to do when something like that happens, if it should, which hopefully it will not?
Including cybersecurity as part of the disaster recovery plan is the most sensible action that you can take, right?
Prepared this? What?
True, right? That's one thing. The other action that I would suggest is, like, attending some of the cybersecurity awareness talks, especially those who are for farmers and producers. You know, why I am saying especially those? Because, you know, at the same time that I am trying to work with the farming industry on educating on cybersecurity, I am spending time educating cybersecurity community about farming, right? You know, you cannot go and tell a farmer that you need to patch a milking robot. That's impossible. You cannot go and tell a farmer that you need to change the password on one of the vendors, let's say, on your tractor, right? These are not possible. So when I'm hearing that from cybersecurity community, that they say, go change your passwords, right? And they go, they run events and telling people. And then when I go on the farm and talk to farmer, I never forget, there was one of the farmers that we were talking to, and he was like, Ali, I went to two of these events, and after that, I stopped going. Because what you're suggesting is not relevant to me, right? So it's important that we build, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, and that's what we are doing, right? I mean, if you look into our activities, we are trying to build relevant security controls, you know? You do not want to waste your money on, say, I can tell you, you are both saying that you are having farm, right? So let me ask you a question. Which one is more risky to you? You change the password of some of your remote control devices, whatever it is that, or your portals, to a difficult to guess password, and your vendor cannot connect remotely, or the attacker get access remotely with the default password. Most of the people are saying that the vendor, most of the people out there are saying that the vendor risk is higher. I want to have the support of my vendor. So we are looking at an environment that's a fact. And as a cybersecurity professional, we need to build solutions that work around this business need. We cannot go to the business and tell them that you have to change your password and make it difficult. Oh, that doesn't make sense, right? My business is not operating that way, right? So what I'm saying is, like, we are working on both directions. We are trying to improve security awareness on the farmers. At the same time, we are trying to improve awareness of the farming need among cybersecurity professionals, right? So you should not go to a farmer and tell them that change the passwords and make it more difficult. I mean, have you ever walked in the farm? Have you seen the devices that are collected? How can I change the password? What's the suggestion there, right? But when you say, but keep your password as it is, but two-factor authentication, which means there would be a message coming to your phone or to your vendor phone. That makes all the sense, right? Because then you can put your vendor there, no password changes needed, the same level of security. So you should never ask a farmer to change the password. Tell them, enable two-factor authentication. That works. And that's not only for the farming. So for example, when I talk with the oil and gas, any business that has a lot of operational needs, they are not IT office kind of business, they would need to go to that direction, right? So what I'm saying is, like, we need to work on both directions, right? You know, this is Cybersecurity Mouse, and one of the things that I do during this mouse is just trying to reach out and talk, right, about all this, right? But saying that, from the farmer's point of view, they need to include that as part of their disaster recovery. But if it is just one single action that they need to take is to reach out and build relationship with some cybersecurity professional, right? Because you don't know what type of attack would come to your farm. But you should know who should call, right? And the third thing that I would suggest is if you wake up a day and you see a prompt on your screen, right? The most important thing that you should do is do nothing. Just call the experts. Do not click on any link. Do not even restart the system. Because most of these ransoms, the clock would not start until the attackers understand that you saw the message. And the way you tell the attackers you saw the message, you click on the link or you restart your system, right? And when the clock starts, everyone would be in a panic mode, right? You have like 10 hours, otherwise that's done, right? And we don't want to be on that situation. I'm not saying that we have not been there. We have been there and we have helped clients. But it's much easier that we go to a system that there is no clock running. We can take our time, understand the situation, right? So if you do these three things, right, you would help your business a lot, right? Have two-factor authentication in place for whatever devices that you can. Make sure that you have a business recovery, that's a recovery plan for your cybersecurity, including contact of a cybersecurity professional. And when you get attacked or you see that it's an attack there, call someone for help before doing anything, right? And that someone is not the IT shop down the road. That's not the person, right? You got to call the professionals, right? To come on the scene and look into it.
Well, Ali, I really do appreciate all of this. Just from the standpoint of getting us better informed as to what we need to do, I think as we go into, you know, kind of the winter, it does sound like a really important discussion that we can have at some of our meetings, at some of our policy sessions, all of that, to just wrap our heads around what this is and recognize that it is a risk and we need to do something. So, Ali Degantana, thanks very much for joining the Canadian Podcast. We appreciate you sharing your expertise with us.
Great to be here. Thanks for fine. Have a good one.
Well, that's about all the time we have today. A big thank you to our production team, Carl Bélanger and Bruce Sargent, and of course to our sponsor, the Dairy Farmers of Canada. And a huge thank you to our guest expert, Dr. Ali Degantana at the University of Guelph, for sharing his insights with the PodCow. He really highlighted how intertwined technology, land, and agriculture have become and how much is at stake. And I don't know about you, but I think this is going to impact everything I'm thinking about going forward. It's really been a fairly transformative episode.
Well, you know, it is one of those where, because, you know, we have it, it kind of sits in the back of your mind. You hear of, you know, he mentioned it, healthcare and oil and gas. You hear of other ones being attacked and you think, well, I'm sure they won't go after me. But if I'm the easiest target, then certainly I don't want that. So it is one of those things that it's been a fascinating conversation. And I think that cybersecurity at the farm just isn't something that we should wait any longer to deal with.
Yeah, definitely not. I don't know the solution yet, but I know that part of it is being proactive. As we learned, it is our responsibility. We can't shirk that one. We didn't get away with that in the conversation. And so we need to start looking at how we're going to bring this forward in our own farms and in the industry.
I couldn't agree more, Sarah. And if you like this episode, make sure that you do share it with your own networks. See how we did it? We were talking networks. Now it's the social networks. Yeah, no problem. And don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Until next time, I'm Andrew Campbell.
And I'm Sarah Sash. Thanks for tuning into the Canadian Podcast, and stay safe out there, both in the fields and online.